I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. One of the more difficult books to put down is Everything British Columbia, the Ultimate Book of Lists. Its authors, Bethany Lindsay and Andrew Weichel, join me now. It's a book full of fascinating lists they've compiled, as well as those from uniquely placed British Columbians. There are lists here from Roy Henry Vickers, David Suzuki, Kevin Chong, Biff Naked, and Lainey Louie, as well as from historians like Rick James, Madeline de Trancale, and Michael Kluckner, Eve Lazarus, and Glenn A. Mofford. Journalists such as Justin McElroy, Rod Mickleber, Rob Shaw, and Richard Zussman, and many others. We get insight into the character of British Columbia from its political scandals and weird laws as well, from the darker side of our history like riots, racism, and murders. The remarkable outdoors is celebrated with lists of hikes and beaches, as well as the bucolic flora and fauna found in every corner of the province. I asked Bethany and Andrew about how this book came about, how lists were arrived at, as well as how they cultivated a distinguished group of contributors. One will find themselves agreeing with a lot of what's in the book, as well as often quibbling with how the ranking turned out on a particular list or what was left off. Bethany Lindsay's previous book is British Columbia Burning, the Worst Wildfire Season in BC History. She writes for CBC News here in Vancouver and has worked for the Vancouver Sun, CTV, and the Cambodia Daily in Phnom Penh. At Bethany Lindsay is her Twitter handle. Andrew Weichel is a producer at CTV Vancouver. His work has appeared in the Vancouver Sun and West Ender newspapers. His Twitter handle is at CTV Andrew. This new book is published by McIntyre Purcell. As Crawford Killian said on Twitter recently, it looks like a book Chuck Davis would have absolutely loved. That it is. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Bethany Lindsay and Andrew Weichel. Mr. Weichel, good morning.
Hi, thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for joining us. Ms. Lindsay, good morning.
Hi, great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Are you by nature list people? Like, do you make lists? I noticed that there are lists in front of you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, we're both daily journalists and both work online most of the time. And that means you have, like, a million things to get through in every day, a bunch of stories, calls to make, every day, lists.
Every day. One list a day, for sure.
So this must have been fun, then, to put together lists of, well, you know, your favorite places to go or things that you were interested in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like I said, we both work in daily news, and that can be kind of, you know, sometimes a grind and sometimes it's a lot of serious stuff, you know, politics and crime and stuff like that. And so it was kind of just fun to do something that's a little lighter. And then that's just like a quick mouthful of every topic.
I noticed as I was reading the book, there were lists that frustrated me. Because I was I found some of the, whether you made the list or there was a contributor, some of the rankings were not probably where I would have put things or where there was stuff that was left out.
So to be clear, for the most part, we tried not to approach them as rankings.
Yeah.
So it was sort of just a very detached, you know, this is just a list of things under this category for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, Justin McElroy, I think, couldn't resist.
He's the king of rankings.
He loves to rank. So his ghost town was a ranking. But yeah, for the most part,
we're agnostic to the order of most of the lists.
You just have to be, it's a list and it has to be in order, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
to 10.
Exactly.
Were there lists, Andrew, that you particularly enjoyed putting together?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I really loved working on a lot of the history lists, you know, just getting to dig into some of that. You know, six BC riots that had nothing to do with hockey. I thought that was just so fascinating. You know, riots are always sort of so fascinating. Just looking into the different social issues that were sort of percolating at the time, you know, and a lot of it was very dark. You know, we've had some race riots in this province. The 1907 riot was known as the Anti-Oriental Riot at the time. It was obviously quite a dark blotch on BC's history. But you'd also had a lot that sort of in retrospect you can kind of just look back and chuckle, you know, like the 1992 MC Hammer riot that happened in Penticton after the MC Hammer concert. And it saw a bunch of, you know, the mob rolled that iconic peach-shaped concession stand into Okanagan Lake. And
yeah. You know, Bethany, we know you from your work at the CBC and the Sun previous to that. In recent weeks, you've had to cover some pretty horrific stuff in the courts. And as I was reading the book, I was thinking, you know, we think about how bucolic this place is. There is a dark side, as Andrew just alluded to, in terms of these riots. But then, you know, there are lists in here of serial killers and mm-hmm. people who are missing still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if every place is like that, but there is kind of something about BC where we have had this history of serial killers, and maybe it's kind of the remoteness of a lot of places in BC.
Every province is going to have serial killers and things. We've got some of the worst of the worst, really. I mean, we've got... Cody Legibikov was Canada's youngest serial killer. Clifford Olson was the most notorious child killer in Canadian history. So, it's definitely there's some dark points in the book compared to some of the other lists. But, yeah, fascinating stuff, though.
Yeah, and then there was one murder in there not too long ago, even, from the early 2000s that I'd forgotten about.
Right.
The guy from Benin.
Kembo.
That's the other great thing about this book is that it jogs your memory in terms of things that have happened. And I don't know what other readers, but I was on my computer right after, as I was reading, Googling things and even restaurants and things.
I mean, that's really what we had in mind, you know, that we just give people sort of a little taste of a lot of this history and culture. And it's sort of a stepping stone to other better books, more thorough books, you know.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of times where we were inspired to write lists because, you know, we just remembered something interesting, a story that we'd reported on and been like, wow, I wonder how many other related cases there are.
Yeah, like the exotic pets getting loose and things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
The book is also useful as a guide. There are lists of beaches and Stephen Hoy's list of hikes. And sorry, I'm not a hiker, but I mean, I could easily use that as a guide if I wanted to do this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And we wanted to be like a mix of fascinating, funny, and then useful, I guess. It was really cool to get kind of the concierges from different hotels to recommend what they would recommend to their visitors. And that was funny because that was actually a friend of mine who works in the film industry. She comes to Vancouver a lot to work on Hallmark films. And she said, you know who knows a lot about Vancouver? The concierge at the Shangri-La. I'll connect you with her. You should get her recommendations. I was like, wow, that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
They really know the city, and that's what, you know, all these tourists that come here, that's what they talk about when they leave, right? It's the guy at the hotel or the person at the hotel told me that this is where I should go.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you both spend a lot of time traveling BC?
We spend a fair bit, you know, the sort of further north areas I haven't been to since I was a child, but we pop over the island, we go up the Sunshine Coast. I grew up in the Okanagan, so, you know, we're going back and forth there quite a bit. I've spent a lot of time
all
over.
There's still a lot of places where I'd like to go. You know, every once in a while work takes me someplace interesting.
Sure.
Like, I got to go to Bella Bella when the Royals were here, and so I had a very small glimpse of that. But I think working on this book really inspired me to want to see a lot more.
Yeah, that's the same thing that I had. I mean, it made me feel bad that I hadn't been to a lot of places in this province.
Oh, that's good. We try to make a very conscious effort not to make it too lower mainland focused,
right?
So I'm glad to hear that.
Like, I could just go by Roy Henry Vickers' list of his favorite places, some really cool spots that I'd love to see.
Yeah, and he's a guy whose art is really inspired by this place, whether he lived the time that he lived here in Vancouver or now that he's up there, you know, near the Skeena.
Mm-hmm.
His time, of course, in Tofino, which is, you know, a lot of his art.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, you mentioned Roy. How did you get him to contribute his list?
Well, Roy is just such an incredibly generous guy. All we had to do was email him, and he said, yes, I'd love to be involved. Yeah. I think he called me immediately after getting my email. So, yeah.
Now, wasn't he busy with the Grammys or something?
Yeah,
at the time,
he was
too?
Getting ready. He was getting fitted for his outfit for the Grammys.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I'll get it to you right away. Don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a good variety of British Columbia, too. You know, that it's not the things that we're used to seeing or even hearing about. There's one place in there that he mentioned that it's hard to access.
Right, yeah. Several of them are. Yeah. But he's a guy who's seen a lot of the province in different ways than most of us probably have.
Yeah, it was quite easy getting a lot of the contributors. A lot of people were really happy to take part, which was great because, you know, it's a lot of work. To be involved in something like this.
Mm-hmm.
There was one funny story. Getting David Suzuki was kind of fun. He was also quite quick to be on board, but you know, we first reached out by emailing his people, and they got back to us right away, and they were like, just so you know, this sounds like a project that Mr. Suzuki definitely could be interested in, but he only takes this kind of request by snail mail. So we had to basically take the email and write it up by hand and fold it up. But we sent it to him, and a few weeks later he got back. And
And the other thing, the lists are so thoughtful. There's a list there from the two folks at the Vancouver Historical Society, Michael Kluckner and Madeline Dutranquille. It's a list that, as you can see, I've got a lot of BC and Vancouver books.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a list of things that probably would have been written about, say, 50 years ago, 25 years ago, even.
Right.
It's a more modern look at our history, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's more insightful of kind of the rights and wrongs of our history, and more acknowledging of that. And I think that was...
Yeah, it's not all just triumphs, like, oh, here we took this giant leap forward and then this giant leap forward. I think there was 10 turning points in Vancouver history.
Exactly.
It was called,
it's great. Yeah, and I think one thing that was important to us was to, I mean, I think a lot of history books, at least in Canada, you know, they focus on a very narrow perspective of how this country or this province came to be, a kind of pretty white man-centric triumphant story. And we really didn't want to do that. And so it was great that the Vancouver Historical Society was kind of on board with that.
And then you look at Mickleburg's list, for example, on labor history. I mean, you know, he's written a great deal about it. That sort of stuff doesn't really make mainstream history, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there was some really cool stuff in that list, like that one of the first unions on the waterfront was entirely First Nations. I really thought that was cool. And Rod, of course, nobody knows their stuff like Rod does.
Yeah. The political history by Rob Shaw and Richard Zussman I thought was fascinating because, again, it's another section of the book where, you know, I thought I knew everything about BC politics and then I'd forgotten some of these things, you know, like the dancing penis, for example.
Oh, my God. That was one of my favorite bits in the book. Rob and Richard really went above and beyond on that one. Like, each one of those entries is so thorough, and I know, like, they checked with Vaughn Palmer and a lot of the veterans at the Ledge to make sure everything was right.
I think it might be the longest list in the book, actually. It's so thoroughly researched and interesting. I saw that and I was like, are we half-assing the list? We're contributing to the book.
Yeah, or? Exactly.
It's also shows just how colorful the politics is in this country. We're in the midst of a federal election.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really nothing like BC politics ever. And it doesn't matter what period of time. There's a chapter in their book, De Cosmos.
Cosmos,
a weird guy he was.
Real eccentric. He was a real man of contradictions, Amor De Cosmos. Yeah, BC's second premier. That one was a lot of fun to research as well. Yeah. just such an odd character. Very racist, mm-hmm. as, you know, probably most politicians were at the time, but also was very opposed to imposing Christianity on indigenous peoples. He was just always all over the map.
Yeah.
Very intellectually curious, but then terrified of electricity, yeah. at least in his later years, refused to step foot on a streetcar.
Yeah, and just the name itself is odd, right?
Yeah. Where else but NBC could you have a politician named Amor de Cosmos take the most powerful seat?
And that continues today. I mean, you talk about in their list, pardon me, they talk about, you know, the Campbell years and the Clark years.
Mm-hmm.
We forget, you know, 25, 30 years ago, just how remarkable the Van der Zandt years were. And just every day seemed like, it was like the Trump era, you know?
Right, mm-hmm. yeah. And, I mean, he keeps coming back with this stuff. But, yeah, their account of the Fantasy Garden mm-hmm. sale is just, everything about it is so flamboyant from, what's her name?
Faye Young?
Yeah. The woman of many hats.
Right.
And just the fact that it was this whole scandal was over a biblical theme park.
Right.
I loved it.
And the story about Bud Smith and the cell phones cell phones were huge back then and literally big. People could listen in on phone calls.
Yeah. Yeah. It's remarkable how much crazy stuff has happened in BC politics. And, you know, the sense we got from doing this was we really just have one government for a long time.
Yeah.
And then they build up a whole bunch of scandals until it's too many scandals and then they topple. And then the new guys come in and who knows what the NDP green scandal will be.
Yeah. You really do learn about what's happening today and the future from history, don't you? And I guess that's what interested you both, and I can see that throughout the book.
Oh, good, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What was it like to look back at some of the inventions that have come out of British Columbia? Because we don't really think about BC as sort of innovative in technology and the sort, but I mean, even recipes, the Nanaimo bar, for example.
Yeah, the Nanaimo bar, although to be fair, there is dispute there. I mean, Albertans, British
right.
Columbians say that the Nanaimo bar is from BC, and Albertans say they did it first, called it a smog bar. I was very surprised by some of the stuff we found on that list. It was really cool. Egg cartons.
Who knew?
Originally called the Coyle Egg Safety Carton, I believe it was, after the inventor Joseph Coyle, who saw a clear need for it. I think there was an anecdote about how we saw someone delivering eggs to a hotel or a bed and breakfast or something, and they'd all just got crushed on the way, and it's got to be a better way.
Yeah, very practical things, too, like the reflective vests and
mm-hmm.
adding to that.
The reflective traffic lights.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Who knows how many accidents that's prevented. And the antiretroviral therapy for AIDS patients as well.
Dr. Montaner.
Yeah.
Andrew did that list, and he definitely had to go to some kind of extraordinary lengths to confirm some facts, like the London fog thing.
Oh, yeah.
So for people listening to this, I mean, they probably all know what a London fog mm-hmm. is, but I didn't really know what it was until I looked it up. It's a latte mm-hmm. made out of Earl Grey tea.
Yes, that's exactly right. And with a lot of things, you do some research, and even, if you're looking in the newspapers and things, somebody could say something was made in BC, and who knows, you try to get to the bottom of it. But one thing that we saw a few places on the internet was that, when people were saying that, London fog came from BC, was that in honor of that history, people in Scotland call it a Vancouver fog. And so we tried to find out if that was true. We went to a bunch of Scottish cafe websites, looked at the menus, couldn't see any evidence that was the case. And we ended up going to some message boards even and asking Scottish people, have you heard, do you know what a Vancouver fog is? And they asked us to explain it to them, and the only response we got was, "That's boggin," which I guess is some kind of Scottish slang for gross.
Nonsense.
Or,
oh,
yeah.
The California roll, were you able, Andrew, to figure out if that was a uniquely Vancouver innovation?
So it's a bit disputed, but, you know, we went with Chef Tojo. You know, we acknowledge that... There is a bit of a dispute in the history, but he says he invented it here, and we have no reason not to believe him.
And he generously contributed to the book. So
What was his list again?
It was 10 great sushi ingredients from BC.
I see.
So he did some really cool stuff that I hadn't thought of, and he went into even some vegetarian options like beets. Really made my mouth water.
He was another contributor who was just great to work with. He actually came up with 3 potential list ideas and said he'd just write all 3 lists and let us choose the one we like the most.
There's a great listserv from Biff Naked of remarkable women.
Tremendous and incredible.
And a lot of women that we don't know about.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful showcase of the great achievements that these particular women have accomplished through their lives and careers.
That was something that was really awesome because, you know, I had reached out to Biff and said, like, maybe something about animals or feminism, because I know she's interested in that stuff. And she decided to do this list of tremendous women. And... you know, we didn't say anything like if you could make it a bit more diverse or anything like that. And she knew right away that was important to get people that other people hadn't necessarily heard of. And again, like everybody here was so generous, but Biff was amazing because she kept saying, "I can rewrite it if it's not good enough how it is."
Which is funny because her list was so great too. I mean, her personality really shines through in the way it was written. I really loved it.
And you see that through the people that she picked. Mm-hmm. All walks of life, all diverse backgrounds.
Yeah.
And people we should know, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The other thing that I found curious, you have the popular names of children from, I guess, last year, 2018.
Yep.
From 50 years ago and from 100 years ago. And there's not really much of a difference from 150 years ago. But certainly when you look at the 2018 list, I doubt that a lot of those kids named Liam are Irish.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I have a nephew named Liam, and he's very much not. But, yeah, a lot of our friends are having kids right now, and, yeah, it's... a lot of those names show up.
And you see them on TV shows and the sort, the names of characters. Like, I was wondering,
Daenerys,
you know, if it was
and stuff.
Yeah, we'd have a president Olivia one day, but then I guess, you know, we had an Olivia on Scandal.
Oh yeah, so, that's right.
So it's not too far fetched, I guess. That was a cool list. Those 3 lists were cool to include.
Yeah, we, you know, that was one of those ones that's just very easy to collect. Yeah. You know, the government puts out those lists every year, and we ended up having enough to put that final chapter, the For Your Reference chapter, that's got sort of, you know, some of just the, by the
just
numbers kind of things,
facts
about BC.
Yeah, I think one thing that was interesting is the girls' names tended to, when you go through the history, the girls' names tend to change a lot more than the boys' names
faster,
do.
And it says something about where society is at a particular time that those are the names that are, you know.
Right, yeah. I think right now, too, you're seeing really, really old-fashioned names coming
back. You're both journalists, so I don't know how much stock you put in the paranormal. But there are a number of lists in there that have to do with the paranormal, with UFOs, even haunted houses. Let's start with haunted houses, because I've never seen a ghost, and I've never been into a place. Like, I mean, they say that the Hotel Vancouver is haunted, but every time I've been there, it seems fine. Right?
I mean, I've never seen a ghost either.
I guess I'm an agnostic like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
until I've seen one.
I have at times been bowling at the Commodore Lanes and blamed my poor performance on a ghost for sure.
With those lists, you know, your mileage may vary, but I just think that they're very fascinating reads, you know.
Like you go back to McElroy's list of ghost towns.
Mm-hmm.
They're not literally ghost towns, but they do say a lot about our history, don't they?
And I think Justin captured that really well, just how much of BC's history is about, or at least modern BC history, was about, you know, finding a resource somewhere, building a community around it, and then when it dries up, everybody just jumps ship.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of places on there that I'd really love to visit.
Yeah, and he's
never been to Barkerville, have you?
No, I haven't. Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's the next trip, right?
Yeah.
And he's been to a lot of those places, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Justin, he is. Yeah. He's a completist.
What, back to the paranormal, like Ogopogo and Sasquatch, I mean, you see through history how it rises and falls in terms of what people are, you know, whether they do believe it or not. Mm-hmm. I guess we're at a point now where there's a great interest in Sasquatch.
Right.
But I don't know if I mean, you know, the science isn't settled, if you will.
There's been a couple of court cases recently. There was a guy who wanted to sue the government for the chance to try and prove that Sasquatch is real in court, sort of like Miracle on 34th Street with Santa Claus.
I
think it's one of those persistent myths, again, that, you know, people don't necessarily have to fully subscribe to be able to just sort of enjoy the mythos of it and everything.
Yeah, like Ogopogo. Wasn't there something recently in the summertime where a guy swears that he had it on video?
Yeah,
it happens again and again, just these unexplained things. I think I was actually scrolling through Twitter this morning, and I saw something, and, you know, it was just a glimpse of it, but it was something about some town in the U.S. where apparently their big cryptid is a frogman that people always report seeing.
The Ogopogo list was fun to work on. We tried to mostly, you know, it's just sort of a list of interesting, mostly true facts about Ogopogo history. One of them is actually about belief in the Ogopogo, and it's quite low now. I think it was more people believe that Princess Diana was murdered than think there's actually a serpentine creature.
But you grew up, Andrew, in the Okanagan, so you can't go to a gift shop even and not get something that's marked with that stuff, right?
No, for sure. And actually, when we were kids, we would look out the window at the lake the whole time we drove by and just see if you could see something pop up. There's actually been a bit of an interesting thing happening recently with all the marketing of the Ogopogo stuff. There's been a bit of pushback from local First Nations. So there is actually a lot of really interesting history about, I'm gonna butcher the name, it's Nahatik or something like that, the spirit of the lake.
Uh-huh.
People have started kind of taking a little bit of offense to the way that it's just turned into this white person's keychain.
Yeah.
We tried to be cognizant of that as well and not be too light with the whole thing.
Yeah. You have a list in there about UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
that was kind of a funny one.
Yeah, we never think of I mean, that's usually an American phenomenon where people, you know, it's a supermarket tabloid where...
Well, this is, you know, this is X-Files country.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a little bit of that, too.
Yeah. It was fun working with those guys. I actually quite enjoyed that list. We reached out to the UFO BC Society and asked them for their 10 most credible sightings in BC. And what they came back to us with was, quite fascinating. You know, a lot of them... you'll have, you know, the witnesses were, say, engineers from YVR or people who really would be able to tell the difference.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And even just
children.
The variety and some children.
Yes.
Just the variety of different kinds of experiences I thought was really interesting, too. You know, most you just assume it's a bunch of people seeing a flying saucer in the sky. But then there's the weird ones where it's glowing orbs over a lake and...
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the boaters are surrounded by loons.
Oh, yeah, that one was really good. Really eerie.
We see the diversity of thinking, don't we, of British Columbians? I mean, we tend to think that we all have, you know, that we're all going to vote one way in this next election, but we're not really, are we?
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, we do have a big tendency in this province towards spiritualism, like not non-religion, but ideas that there are other forces in nature or whatever. So I don't think it's surprising that there's, you know, a lot of belief in this stuff here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a list, too, of cults over the years, right?
Oh, yeah.
Even recent ones, right?
Yeah, that one was fun to write. And I should say, for legal reasons, we can't say all of them are cults.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I would love to one day really dig into the history of Brother 12, right, over in Nanaimo.
Yeah.
Because he built just this incredible, corrupt kind of colony of believers in what he did. He thought he was the reincarnation of an Egyptian god. He had this mistress named Madame X, and they basically built fortifications on these islands off Nanaimo and fended off people who tried to approach them and took people captive. And meanwhile, of course, as is the common theme here, he was just embezzling a ton of money from his followers.
What?
And that's happened throughout history, hasn't it?
Yeah.
People fall for this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Nexium is a really great example of that. And, you know, it's interesting, these personalities who are able to gather somebody around them in this way to just give over all control. I don't know. I always wonder, you know, if I ever met one of these cult leaders, you know, would I fall under their spell? It's kind of creepy to think about.
Again, it's the non-religious part of the discourse.
Mm-hmm.
It gets filled with spirituality, and then it gets filled by charlatans.
It happens again and again and again.
Yeah, you've done a lot of reporting, say, on got to be careful here, people that purport to provide medical treatment.
Right.
Alternative medicine.
Rabid
alternative medicine is huge in this part of the world, right?
It really, really is. And, you know, I think there's a lot of valid reasons for that. You know, there's still a lot of illnesses and conditions that we don't fully understand, that we can't quite explain yet. And so everybody's searching for something that can help.
I was just realizing as I was reading the book the other night, going through it again, you could have easily had a book twice the size that it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So how do you know where to draw the line or...
Well, our deadline helps.
Deadlines are definitely a big thing. Yeah.
There were definitely some gaps, some things we wish we could have covered, you know. On the lighter side, I mean, there's no list about marijuana here at all.
Right.
Obviously, BC has a huge
history
of activism in that regard. More key, I would have loved to get something that was about our history of LGBT activism. But, you know, that was one of those lists that I felt would really be better served if we could get somebody else to do it for us. And we reached out to a few people and just couldn't quite get somebody to commit in time. And it was unfortunate. But, yeah, I mean, definitely we could fill a much, much larger book.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I just noticed on the cover here, 6 BC riots that had nothing to do with hockey. Because I guess we all remember the hockey riot from 8 years ago or so. I mentioned this earlier, but I think it's worth revisiting. We forget how violent this place can be.
Yeah.
And when race is involved, how much worse that is.
Oh yeah. Well, the what was known as the anti-Oriental riot in 1907, that was 3 days long, just roving around, destroying people's businesses, people's homes, attacking human beings. It's a very dark period in Vancouver's history and in BC's history, prompted by a meeting, or it started at a meeting of what was called the the Asiatic Exclusion League.
Right.
Can you just imagine a major political force calling itself that today?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's not that
too
hard.
Far off.
But I mean, it had the mayor and some councillors were members of it. So, yeah.
And the Klan was also a big part of Vancouver society at the time.
Yeah, and I don't think most people know about that. But yeah, there is some really, really dark stuff. I don't know if you know James Green, ran for mayor.
Right, yeah.
So he's kind of written a personal history of racism in Vancouver. It's not out yet. But some of the stuff just about growing up here as a black kid is really, really awful.
And then to contrast that, there are heroes in the book. And then the experience of Joe Fortes, for example, as a black person in Vancouver is incredible to read.
Yeah. he was just so beloved at a time when you wouldn't think that that a black man would be. That was one of the most emotional, I think, lists for me to write, because went back through the archives of the Sun and Province and the Vancouver World, and the stories about the generosity of this man who for years was just acting as a lifeguard for free because he cared about it, teaching all these children how to swim, saving so many lives. And it's really great that the city saw that it was important to recognize him and give him a paid position.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is I don't think a lot of people today who aren't really interested in history know who Joe Fortes is.
You know, the restaurant.
But, yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say, but before we started on this book, I actually thought Joe Fortes was probably a guy, probably the owner of that restaurant there in Robson and Thurlow. And,
Yeah,
to find it was this larger-than-life figure was
amazing.
And
then, as you write in the list, the hero's funeral that he had.
The biggest funeral Vancouver had ever seen. All the schools across the city had a moment of silence for him because, you know, all the kids in town, they'd been taught to swim by Joe. It's just amazing. Full-page spreads on all the fronts of the newspapers. The next day, he was,
Was it Man of the Century, the title they gave him?
Oh, the Vancouver Historical Society, I think it was, called him Citizen of the Century,
which
he absolutely was.
Other heroes in the book, Terry Fox, obviously, Rick Hansen as well.
It's a great honor to get Rick Hansen to take part.
Yeah, and he writes about how, what impact Terry Fox had on him.
Yeah. Well, they were friends. You know, he brought Terry onto his wheelchair basketball team, the Cable Cars, I think it was called.
Uh-huh.
And, they won the championships together, at least 1 year, maybe 2 years in a row.
Yeah. The Terry Fox stuff, I think, happened when I was very, very young.
Right.
And I grew up in Ontario, but just the impact that he had and the kind of resolve to go on through so much pain. Really inspiring stuff.
It must have been fun to do this, and I mean, is there a volume two even?
Well, I mean, we'll see how this sells, but it was a ton of fun. It was also fun to work together because Andrew and I actually met at work.
Uh-huh.
We both worked at CTV.
Back in 2010.
Yeah.
And we had a great time then, you know, just we'd work on the occasional story together, share bylines, and I was definitely sad when she left, and it's great to have a project to work on together again.
Yeah. And to have the great contributors that you had, I mean, that must have been just, I mean, you're still shocked probably.
I couldn't believe it,
Some people were just so keen to do a good job, you know, where, you know, you're asking a big thing of somebody, but like, you know, Ashley MacIver. She she wrote about her favorite ski runs in the province, and you know, she sent me this Microsoft Word document, and I opened it up, and she had her mom's edits in there, right. And I was like, "Oh, you took this really seriously."
The other thing that it points to as I was reading the book, it almost urgent, about how little we know of this place that we live in. I mean, readers must be telling you this, that I didn't know that, or I should have known that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's how we went into it, too.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
It's interesting, yeah. People kind of a little blind to what's right in front of you sometimes. It's almost like with elections, you know, people get so fired up about federal elections and then to a lesser degree provincial and then to a much lesser degree municipal when it's, you know, the municipal government has sort of the most impact on your day-to-day life.
Yeah,
people are always looking out and not necessarily paying a lot of attention and mind to the history of their own province.
Yeah, definitely
here.
A lot of people know a lot more about American history than BC history.
Yeah, and that's a sad part of it. And I think this book is a wonderful way for people to get into it a little bit more, right?
A little stepping stone, yeah.
Yeah, and we hope so.
I mean, you interviewed, I interviewed him when the book came out, who wrote the book on De Cosmos.
Gordon Hawkins.
Yeah, he was like 94 at the time when I talked to him. But yet, I mean, again, you'll read this book and then people will want to know more. You can pick up Gordon's book, right?
Oh, it's a great book. Yeah. Loved reading that.
At the end of the day, it really is a unique place. I mean, it's a maddening place for a lot of reasons because it's just bloody expensive and you know, we obviously have problems. But it really is a special place, isn't it, British Columbia?
Yeah, because it's such an interesting combination of things. You've got, like, the beautiful nature, like, unmatchable. You've got kind of the Wild West history that we've got here. You've got the insane politics.
The protest culture. Yeah. People are, you know, really happy to get out of their living room and actually go stand up for what they believe in. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, I don't think there's any place else on Earth like it at all.
I want to end with how you started in terms of writing the book. Did you? I mean, there were obviously lists that you had to include.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have things that were necessary to do?
Not really. So the publisher pitched this idea to us. They're going to put one out in every province. They've done a couple so far. They pitched the idea to us. Before we signed on, decided to spend one evening brainstorming ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat down and we decided, you know, what kind of list would we actually want to read? You know, we don't want to do the most obvious everything. You know, we didn't want to do the list about, you know, things about the Stanley Cup riots or anything. We were like, oh, what about all the riots that didn't have to do with hockey?
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the angle we took. And the ideas just flowed out of us so easily. We had this, you know, huge list of like 50 lists.
Yeah, we
could work on.
We started with a list.
With a list, yeah. And so after that one night, we were kind of like, well, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you've done a great service with this book. It's a pleasure to meet you both. I'm great admirers of your work, obviously, at both of the places where you work at. Thanks for coming in to do this. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Joe. This was fun.
Thank you so much.
The book is called Everything British Columbia, The Ultimate Book of Lists. McIntyre Purcell is its publisher. Its authors, Bethany Lindsay and Andrew Weichel, join me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.